All right, well, good morning, and thank you guys for getting up and being here. I know it's the last day, so people are kind of winding down and ready to go home. My name is Charlene Cotis. I came here from Sandia National Labs in the United States. We're stationed in Albuquerque, New Mexico. This is my first consultancy with the IAEA. So before I even go on to my presentation, I want to thank the IAEA, more specifically Monica, for extending the invite and allowing me to be here. Very grateful. Well, let's see if I can get this thing to work. There we go. So I want to give you a little bit of a background about my organization, so the Sandia National Labs and how my organization functions within the laboratory. And also, at any point in the presentation, feel free to raise your hand and ask questions. That's totally fine. So Sandia National Labs, we've been operational since about 1950. We are one of 17 national laboratories operated by the Department of Energy. We're contracted through the Department of Energy. We are operated by the Lockheed Martin Company, and we are, again, contractors to DOE. And the focus or mission area of the laboratory is around applying science to support national security. So my organization is a small organization within the bigger laboratory. The laboratory staffs about 7,000 to about 8,000 people. We are a small organization, a nuclear operations organization with 4 nuclear facilities. We've been operational since about 1958. Our primary focus area is, of course, supporting the laboratory and their mission focus. And our specific focus areas are around nuclear experimentation, research, and material handling. So I want to give you a little bit of background about who I am and kind of how I got here. It's a very interesting story. So academic history. I have a bachelor's in technology and training, and I have a master's in organizational learning and instructional technologies from the University of New Mexico. I do not have a technical background. So prior to being in the nuclear operations organization, I knew very little about nuclear relative to what I know today. Professional history. I was in healthcare for about 6 years. The latter part of the career in healthcare, I did training where I developed training curriculum and trained physicians and nursing staff how to use a medical record software tool. And I did a lot of traveling, a lot of interactions with individuals. I've spent the last little over three and a half years with the laboratory and the nuclear operations. My primary subject areas, this is both from my academic history and also my professional background, is in life cycle management of content. We'll talk about what configuration management is relative to what I do, but many of the other speakers have also talked about configuration management. I also have experience in information management systems, both in healthcare and in my current organization. Basically, what I do is I'm the middleman between the end users of a specific tool and our local IT department, where I collect the requirements and relay that information back to the IT department so we can utilize a certain function within a tool. And also, I have experience in training and curriculum development, both the dissemination of training and also the development of the curriculum. So let's look at my organization structure. So what I'm going to take you through today is kind of show you a little bit of what our organization looks like and how we came to be, and how that supports knowledge management. And then we're going to focus more on my specific area, which is information management, which is just a small component of the larger system of knowledge management. So prior to me being involved in the organization in nuclear operations, the leadership, this was probably around 2008, our leadership recognized that there was an opportunity to improve the way that we integrate and the way that we accomplish work, because a lot of our processes were in a silo, and we weren't functioning as an integrated team. And that was one of the reasons. There was also external factors with our regulatory bodies that kind of led us down this path. So our management team got together and they said, how can we function better as an organization? How can we become a learning organization? And this is really what came out of it. So let's see if I get the pointer. So we call this, you know, it's an organizational structure, but we call it our quality management system. You also heard a term, I believe, earlier this week about re-engineering. This is basically what occurred. So here we are, our organization is broken up into four subsystems. We have our organization, which is really our business unit, and we have, you know, the business unit here that looks at our financial health. Then we have our integrated work management that looks at how work is being integrated across the organization. And then we have our quality assurance, which looks at long-term planning, strategic planning, and the performance of the organization. So I'm sure all of you have had a chance to meet Marlena Taylor. Marlena Taylor is our program lead for our quality assurance department. She's done a really great job in moving our organization forward in strategic planning and performance improvement. So here our next subsystem is integrated nuclear safety. We have four functions in that area that support the safety of our facilities and our operations. Requirements management, they basically ensure that we are conducting work to requirements, regulatory requirements from the DOE. What I failed to mention is, what is a program lead? I think I mentioned that. So through our management team's process and reorganizing with the way that we look today, they also put in place program leads. We have 12 program leads for our 14 programs, and our role is to be an extension of management, to help them do both strategic and tactical planning and helping them move the organization forward. So each, you know, most of these programs have program leads. The information management program, I am the program lead for the information management program. We have nuclear safety, which helps us manage, ensures that we are functioning within our operating envelope. Training, they ensure that we train our and qualify our operators to be able to conduct safe operations in our facilities. And then we also have an environmental safety and health function within our organization, but it's really a corporate-supported program area. Then the mission subsystem, this is really, this area supports the mission of our organization and also the laboratory. These three program areas interact heavily with the corporation and our customers to ensure that we're meeting the mission. And then the operations, engineering, and maintenance is pretty self-explanatory. Those are three programs within the organization. Okay, so you guys have seen this quite a bit. If you all walk away with anything, hopefully it's that knowledge management involves people, process, and tools. If you don't walk away with that, you guys are probably sleeping. So hopefully you walk away with that. So I'm not going to spend too much time here on this, but what I do want to emphasize is we all have seen the IAEA definition of knowledge management. But what I want to emphasize is that they have helped us and the curriculum that they have developed and the guidance that they have developed to help us look at our organization. So our definition, what is current today may not be current tomorrow, but we've utilized the IAEA to help us develop our definition and the way that we look at knowledge management. So the way that we define it is that it's the identification, capturing, and sharing of information to prepare and allow the next generation of workers to inherit the organization. I completely concur with David that knowledge management is about people. And for us, it's about preparing our people to inherit the organization. All right, so let's take a look at what our model looks like. This is something that's very new that a colleague and I developed back in late 2013. We went to go speak at a conference in the Czech Republic, and we were asked to speak of knowledge management. So what we did is we did a very topical review of our organization to say where in the organization do we implement knowledge management. I want to say that I am not responsible for knowledge management. I, along with every other individual in my organization, they are responsible for knowledge management. So this is just a representation of what that looks like. So we started at the very high level. Do our regulatory bodies support knowledge management? Does the Sandia Corporation support knowledge management? In our strategic planning, do we support knowledge management? The answer is yes. And that's this little cluster that you're looking at up here, where the outer body is our Department of Energy, and then the custard yellowish color is our strategic plan. And then here we have the knowledge management hub right in the center. So the outer cover is our corporation and our regulatory bodies. So kind of looking in at the inner shell here, we have many different things going on in this diagram. So just to give you an idea of how we implement knowledge management at the laboratory, kind of we're looking down here at the Sandia and the HR components. Sandia National Labs has many ways in which they support knowledge management. We have wikis, we have communities of practice, we have document repositories. We have tons of different things going on in the corporation. They also have a conference management tool, which I'll tell you a little bit later about in the presentation, and the expertise identification as well. Human resources, as we all have heard, plays a very large role in knowledge management. From a Sandia Corporation standpoint, just some examples that they do is employee development. They are really good at employee development. Even within my organization, we support employee development very much. That's the reason why Marlena and I are here. It's the reason why a lot of us are able to do a lot of the things that we do outside of the United States, within the United States. So the corporation supports that very much. Mentoring and coaching. When you enter the lab as a new employee, you are assigned a mentor. That mentor is, their role is to get you acclimated to the Sandia culture and the environment and available to ask questions. When you go into your local business unit, you also get a mentor. And that individual is responsible for helping you get acclimated to your internal environment and getting you trained to transfer knowledge. That's the intention. Our nuclear training and qualification area, we basically train our operators and qualify our operators to be able to work at the facilities. This occurs across the laboratory as well. It's not specific to nuclear because other than our entity or our organization, there's other technical fields throughout Sandia. And then a lot of cross-training. Something that my manager has done is what he likes to do is after a period of time, about 2 years, he will change our organization. So earlier we talked about four different program areas. Those four different program areas are his responsibility. He ensures that the individuals in that program don't just know their job, but they know the jobs of the other programs as well. So at any point in time, we can assist, and we have that knowledge in case, you know, something comes up and we need to step in. Other areas, we have our nuclear operations and quality management system. I'd already talked about that. We talked about our program leads and what a vital role that they play in the organization. And then our quality assurance program, which is just our overall management system. The way that we do implicit and tacit knowledge, we do a lot of lessons learned. We have four operational facilities, a lot of things going on. Anytime that a major installation occurs or modification or some type of condition some type of issue that's adverse to quality, we get together and we talk about, you know, what happened, why did it occur. We develop lessons learned and best practices around those activities. We have frequent organizational meetings where people just get together and have a dialogue and learn from each other, ask questions. We have seminars. We bring in people that are retirees from the laboratory and also our organization. And it can primarily technical, but it also can be non-technical. A lot of storytelling. Monica was mentioning earlier in the week that as people are nearing retirement, they feel the need to share. They want to share, and they do that through storytelling. There's one individual in the organization that I go sit with. I have one question, and I'm there for an hour. But in that hour, I get a lot of information that I would not otherwise get if the answer or the response from him was just yes or no, or just very, you know, very short. All right, the organizational database, I'm going to talk a little bit more about that later because I do play a role in that. We use a tool called Enterprise Bridge, EB for short. It's a Bentley product. You can Google it, learn more about it. It's a configuration management tool that is utilized more heavily in the nuclear power plant industry, but we've adopted it in our organization and are using it for different functions. Some of the functions that we use it for are listed here: work planning and control, documents and records, condition reporting and corrective action, and then we have our physical system hierarchy on there as well. We do annual work planning. We have a shared document where each program lead is responsible for identifying the work for the year, and that's a shared document so we can all see how we play a role in the work that is being done throughout the year. And it's also shared with the managers. It allows the managers to do planning for the year for the work that needs to get done. A lot of integrated teaming, like I mentioned. We're a highly regulated organization, and we've got a lot of things going on in our facilities. Therefore, there's a lot of interaction between people. And then our assessment area, there's a tremendous amount of information that comes out of this. We are assessed both internally and externally, and through that we learn about ways that we can improve. We get together and strategize about how to do that, and it's just a really good knowledge management function. Okay, I think that's it. All right. I'm not going to spend too much time on this slide. For everyone, the reasons why knowledge management is important are going to be slightly different, but it will involve the importance of people, the importance of having a proceduralized or a process to some extent, and having tools in place to support all of that. So the reason why, you know, some of the things that I came up with, this is certainly not an all-inclusive list, but it's an investment in people. It is about people. Without people, your processes don't function. They're just pieces of paper. They're just tools. That's all they are. It's about building learning organizations by making learning routine. If sharing knowledge in your organization is not embraced in your culture, you're going to continue to work in silos. You're going to continue to work for yourself and not for each other. It creates organizational sustainability, both for the current and the future. Changes that are being made today need to be documented, they need to be understood, they need to be shared, so we can understand them later on in the future when we're putting up new construction or decommissioning or making any major modifications. It improves data retrievability, traceability, and transparency. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we start talking about information management specifically. It reduced costs. Two primary examples are turnover and rework. A lot of energy gets spent on rework when we don't work together and we don't share information. So a lot of money can be saved, a lot of time, a lot of energy can be saved around that. Just a slide to really illustrate that the reason why we care about knowledge management is it's our people. I will tell you that I've worked in different, you know, organizations within the healthcare umbrella, and it makes me proud and happy to say that I work with some amazing people, just amazing, and it's about them every day. All right, so information management, that is my primary function, and we're just going to spend a little bit of time here and talk about how that plays a role in knowledge management. So what is information management? We heard David and I believe Anatoly talk about the importance of managing information. It's about documents and records. Okay, so I have this document, and I can give it to you, and you can store it in some tool that does nothing without context. Nothing. You're just storing a piece of paper. It means something to you today, but is it going to mean something to you tomorrow? And what about the person using it 10, 15, 20 years from now? So one of my roles is to ensure that the information that goes into our system, EB, has context. We know why it was created. Was it because of a requirement? Was it because we just wanted to do it? What is it related to? What facility? What program? What people were involved in it? What systems at the facilities? you know, systems, subsystems, components, what was related to that, what other documentation, work planning, safety management, other components, what else was related to this, really creating depth behind our information. That's my primary role within my program, is to ensure that information has that context. Another role within the program is to ensure that information is standardized and has a consistency to the way that it looks, the flow of information. Just an example, we are heavily proceduralized. We have heavy proceduralized processes. The operators at our facility don't operate without procedures. That's part of a requirement, and it's the right thing to do. And if one operator goes from one facility to another, which sometimes does occur, where they're qualified to work in two different facilities, it's important that their information, when they're operating at the reactor or they're operating in the materials handling facility, that their procedure looks like the previous, because it creates a human factor issue if they don't. Errors can occur. All right, so I mentioned a little bit about configuration management, and I know we saw another definition earlier, I believe it was yesterday, on configuration management. There's slightly different differences in some of the definitions, but nevertheless, it is about life cycle management of something. From my perspective and, you know, where I work in the organization, it's about life cycle management of documents and records. Another example is engineering. They heavily use configuration management to manage the systems and components at the facilities. It's about managing information from its inception to its archival. All right, so how does nuclear operations manage information? We look at it, and you know, we're starting to be better at this than we have in the past, is looking at information for its value, its criticality. A definition that me and my program have started to come up with about critical information and what does that really mean is, it can be anything that's created or received in the course of the organization's operations and activities, which provides evidence of the organization's functions, policies, decisions, procedures, operations, and other activities. So it could mean lots of different things. But what it doesn't mean is that I just robotically take a piece of information and put it in a tool and never ask questions. So every time someone gives me a document, it's like sitting in an interview. You know, I'm sitting there asking them a lot of different questions so I can do my job effectively. And I can then, you know, have the information prepared in such a way that it can be used later. Some feedback that I would give you all in terms of documenting. Think about the end user. Think about who will have to use it. Ask yourself some questions when you're writing a document, you know, and think about that within the context of what you're trying to communicate. What happened? What was decided? What advice was given? Who is involved? When did it happen? Why did it happen? Think about some of those things. Certainly all those won't apply, but think about that when you're documenting. More information is often better than less. All right, and just to kind of talk a little bit more about, you know, managing information. We are a highly integrated organization, and that's part of the reason why our culture is so healthy around sharing information and the way that we do work. I will say that I've been told by numerous people in the organization that we were not like this 5-6 years ago. We have been shifting the culture in this direction, and it has been working very well for us. You know, it's very important for us to keep our relationship healthy with our regulatory bodies. They can see this. They can see that we are an integrated organization. So we have a lot of proceduralized processes. I did explain that earlier. We provide context to, you know, whatever it is we're developing, and we do our best to document as much as that we can to standardize our approach to doing work. One of the other things that we're working on is a document hierarchy. So within the Enterprise Bridge, the EB tool, my responsibility is to work with every program in our organization to ask them questions around what do you generate, why, and how should it be managed and stored, and how do you want to retrieve it. I've created a taxonomy within this system of how information should be structured. This taxonomy is evolving as it should, as information should evolve, but it's around the essence of information. Why are we creating it? To give you an example of something we've put in place, we generate procedures. A procedure is the parent. It's that topical level of the taxonomy. The subsystem or the children of that parent are the different types of procedures: administrative, maintenance, operational procedures. So we look at our taxonomy in such a way. So we are developing that, and it's making information more retrievable by doing so. We apply metadata to everything that goes into our system. So what the document doesn't present in terms of information, we identify it through metadata. So someone gives me a document, and it may have some basic things like content, title, may have a revision number, things like that, but it may be lacking other components that are important, like the engineering components. What facilities does it relate to? Who authored it? Who reviewed it? Who approved it? Who owned it? Just creating all that context around it. And that goes with the, you know, the retrievability. It supports retrievability, and it applies attributes to our information. Document relationships, we talked about that. Basically, the power of this tool allows us to integrate documentation to where if I put in a procedure into the tool, I'm able to link every component, every evidence type document that relates to it that shows that we are able to use that documentation. So a lot of the evidence material around that. Our tool also allows us to track changes. Configuration management is about tracking. It's life cycle management. I can put in a change against a procedure and say why, assign priority. Those changes can get stacked up, and there's a complete audit trail from the time that it went in all the way to the time that I actually went in and revised that procedure. So it's just applying heavy configuration management. So these are just some visual representations of some of the systems that we use. The Enterprise Bridge is shown here on the left. It's just visual representation. I've kind of already given you a flavor of how we use it. We use it for also our condition reporting and corrective action. That's an area that Marlena owns. So a piece of the application goes to managing that process. Another piece of the application goes to managing work planning and control. Another piece of the application goes to managing how we do configuration management around our engineering items, like our systems in the facilities. We use Microsoft SharePoint to do a lot of collaborative work. Every program in our organization has their own SharePoint site in which we use to work together to share information that may not necessarily qualify as information that needs to go into our tool as a document or a record, but nevertheless adds value to the team. All right, just some other examples of some repositories that we use for information management. We utilize the corporation for their content repository system to upload documentation that's shared beyond our organization. Sometimes our regulatory bodies and others at Sandia National Labs need access to information. And our local information in our EB tool, we like to keep it access controlled and be very critical about who has access to it. So we utilize this particular repository for that information when it's shared beyond our local teams. We have an internal website. The value of the website is really just a hub of information where people can go get links. Like if they want to go to someone else's SharePoint site or some other tool within our organization, we utilize our internal website. We also develop a lot of hard copy stuff. One of the challenges that I'm faced with today is I recently did an assessment on our facility records. legacy records specifically. And we have not, you know, in the past, we have not managed information the way that we should have. We basically did what I said in the beginning. We took documentation and we shoved it in a folder, put it in a cabinet, and I don't really know how often we ever looked at it again. Some of these records, which I will also say, there's about 1,700 cubic feet of information that needs to be managed. I have a team of four. And we also have to function with the day-to-day activities, so having to work on this project presents some challenges with our existing team. So some of the individuals, some of the documentation dates back since we began operations in the 50s. These individuals aren't even around to help us figure out what to do with some of this stuff. So there is there information loss? Yes. Is there knowledge loss? Absolutely. You know what? I want to back up 1 minute here. Let me emphasize something on the Enterprise Bridge application that's really important. One thing that I would like you all to take away today is that when you implement information management systems in your organization, think about your end users. Do not just collect requirements without thinking about how they need to use the tool. That was one of our failures. The tool is a great tool, fabulous, but we did not put in a user interface. Extremely important when you're putting in information management systems. You want to put the systems in place for the people that are going to use them. They are what matters. So when you're working on that in your organization, please think about those things. All right, so let's look at the corporation tools really quick. Looks like I'm running a little short for time, so I'll speed it up. So Sandia National Labs, they have their own content repository system. That's what you see up here and what I explained earlier. We use it as well. They also have the local intranet, so a lot of information is available there, you know, corporate-wide. Other things that are going on at Sandia National Laboratories that I'd like to know is we have a conference tool. What this conference tool does is it allows people to connect with each other. If I like a conference on knowledge management and someone in another organization at the lab wants to go to the same conference, it will connect us. When I come back from this venue, I will go back and rate what I thought about it. I will write a blurb, a little short summary of my thoughts about it, because anyone else interested is going to want to reach out to me and want to find out how it went. We also have an expertise identification tool. It saddens me to say that this has not got a lot of traction at the corporation because of funding. What it's designed to do is take data points within the laboratory, such as these four you see here, published reports. We're a research and development institution primarily, and we publish a lot of stuff, and you can really identify who your subject matter experts are depending on, you know, what they're publishing. Microsoft SharePoint sites, other research and development abstracts, social networking. They're trying to get access to our personal information like resumes and academic history to really help HR and the management within the Sandia Corporation identify where the expertise lies and where our gaps are. I'm hoping that this gets further traction in the future. All right, let's go ahead and close. So, current state of the laboratory. We're aware of knowledge management. We're doing lots of things, but we can be doing lots of things better. So that's really where we're headed. Current state, we do a lot of stuff around capturing knowledge, explicit knowledge. Can we improve? Yes, because a lot of our stuff is just being dumped in repositories with no context and not relying on subject matter experts to help us put context to that information. We do have tools around implicit and tacit knowledge, communities of practice, wikis, things like that, but we can be doing better. I think this is an area where we are probably at our weakest because it's an area that we don't really have a lot of experience with, but I believe in the future that we will get there with individuals like myself, Marlena, and the rest of you in this group. Globally, we have an aging workforce. We've heard a lot about that. I think it just goes without saying that this is an issue and that we need HR's assistance in really doing workforce planning to address this issue and filling those gaps as people start to retire. Within the laboratory itself, we are a very expert-based, we have a very expert-based culture. We have individuals that really do work that is one of a kind, and they're really the only ones doing it. It's very important for us to get the information that they have. And it's also very difficult. Because they are experts, some may be reluctant to share, or we may not have the right tools in place to collect that information. So where are we headed? I think we can do better in having tools in place with our capturing explicit knowledge when providing context. I think we can do a lot better and increase our ability to capture the tacit and implicit stuff, the stuff that we have here that we just don't have here. I think that we will have a more diverse workforce where the individuals getting ready to retire will move in that path and will, you know, onboard other individuals. And I think that overall we're going to create a learning organization, not an expert-based organization, but a learning organization where learning happens organically. It happens just naturally as part of our process. It's something that we embrace. So the last thing I want to say to you guys is that knowledge management isn't about one particular individual. It's about all of us. You all have the responsibility to help others, to educate others, and do the right thing. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Very nice and impressive presentation. Questions?
Everything works.
Okay, I'll start here.
Thank you, Charlene. Earlier you talk about the cross training. And one person from one division should know the job with another person in another division. I would like if you can qualify the quantity or the capacity that one person knows the other functions. Because if I leave my job to learn the other job, who's supposed to do what I should do?
Good question. So the example from my organization is that we have, let me try to put this into some context. We have four programs, and they all have four program, there's four program leads, and there's about three members of staff within each program. What my manager did is he looked at the skill sets of all the individuals, and he moved people around. So everyone was still within that umbrella of his organization where they could be called on for assistance if needed, but it allowed us to get a different perspective and learn based on things that were going on in another program. For instance, I was a member of information management. My role didn't change, but now I'm the program lead. So I'm no longer an individual contributor, but I'm responsible for how work gets done. Another individual came from our safety department into information management, and that was a way for her to learn. And they backfilled that position. So it's not like there would be gaps. We're backfilling and allowing people to learn in the process. Does that help?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Charlene, for your nice presentation. Somewhere you tell about that 1,700 cubic feet of information. How you quantify this?
I actually didn't do it. We hired a contractor to do this, and they basically looked at the cubic feet of information of the square footage of a room, and they looked at how much information can fit in a box, like for reams of paper, and they calculated it by that because there's no way to say this is how much paper we have. We did a very rough estimation based on the size of the rooms and the number of binders and boxes of stuff in these rooms. So it was a very rough estimation, and it's quite scary. Yeah.
Thank you. For the last 16 years, oh, I'm sort of an outsider. I'm not registered for this. I came here for another reason. But since I've served for 16 years on the Nuclear Energy Advisory Committee for the in the U.S., and our concern has been on the back end of the nuclear fuel cycle relative to reprocessing and so forth. And every time we have a change of presidential administration, the emphasis changes completely. I came in under President Bush and President, I came in under President Clinton. After him, Bush pushed hard on reprocessing. Now President Obama has backed away from the reprocessing. And so I see a lot of knowledge is possibly lost. And I was wondering, to what extent do you or do you know other organizations that may try to hold on to previous knowledge so that it doesn't just get lost completely?
I'll be honest, I don't have much experience in that area. When we do shifts in, what I've seen at the laboratory is when we do major shifts in individuals that are just walking away with knowledge, it's very ad hoc. We're responding to them leaving at the point in which they're leaving. And we haven't done a good enough job in really planning around the leave and sitting down and having an interview and asking them questions. It's really around sitting down and talking to them. I think the harder thing to do is develop the question set. What do you really want to know about what they know? And I really don't have much experience in the area, but that's what I've seen and that's what I have to offer.
Yeah, there is a comment here from Marlene.
Hey, just to follow up, I'm working right now with NNSA under their International Safeguards Team, Human Capital Development Subprogram, and what we're trying to do is, under the context of nuclear safeguards, undertake a comprehensive knowledge management effort. So it may not be directly fuel cycle related, but this is a concern, and it's starting to build some traction, and we can follow up. But I agree, it's atrophying a lot, and at least within the organizations there, they can't afford to lose that.
Thank you, Marlena. If there are no more questions, we will move to Professor Kosilov's presentation. Any other issue? Okay, short, please, because we are totally over the agenda.
Yeah.
Taking your time.
Okay.
Not mine.
Okay.
Yes, several times you remarked about the end users of the information. My question is, what did you do to get the information about the end users they want or they need, and at what level of the organization, in which level of the organization this topic was discussed?
So let me see if I understand the question. So you're asking how we went about collecting the information from the end user? So what I have done is I identify stakeholders within a program. So there's like program leads are a really important stakeholder within the organization, where if I need answers to something about how a program uses a particular piece of information, I'll reach out to the program lead and any other knowledgeable or interested individual within that program to work with them and talk to them. So I'm selective on who I choose based on what is being handled at that time. So it's not everyone. It could be just a few people. Yeah.
Thank you, Charlene.
Yes, no problem.